Johnny once told me something very important about Switzerland. There are two categories of people there, just talking about members. There's the Swiss and then the Eidgenossen. And Johnny, of course, is not an Eidgenossen. No, Switzerland is a land of paradoxes, a land of apparent enduring stability, as we learn in D'Amato's paper, and that despite an extraordinary high level of internal diversity, language, religion, that of course finds expression in the fabled political system of consociationalism. Now, a leading textbook about Swiss democracy, which is by my previous colleague Wolf Linder, the subtitle of it is Possible Solutions to Conflict in Multicultural Societies. And interestingly, this adjective multicultural here stands for the historically accumulated diversity, not the one that is the result of immigration. And of course, at the same time, Switzerland has 20% foreigner rate among the total population, twice as much as the United States. Still, the fear of being overrun by foreigners, to quote Johnny's paper again, is a kind of a red threat, a central motive perhaps of domestic policy. And perhaps that goes indeed back to the 13th century origins of the Eidgenossenschaft in the Rütli-Schwur, which was against the House of Habsburg, and of course then there's the Western Front, Napoleon. Swiss are a Verteidigungsbündnis, a Hirtenvolk to fend off invasions from north, east, and northwest. Now, in the past 10 years, the Swiss, three times, they voted, they have used their fabled direct democracy instruments to vote on immigrant and minority issues. Each time the result has been disastrous for immigrants and for the rule of law alike. One must know that each referendum, if it's successful, it's directly inscribed into the Swiss constitution, whereby almost symbolically the sovereign right of the people trumps the rule of law, upon which routinely follows a complex and often protracted process of rendering the vote compatible with domestic and international law, and that is then the job of the Bundesrat of the executive government. In my commentary, I go through these three big initiatives. You find them also in Johnny's paper, so I will not say much about that. Sartori, the Italian political theorist, he's not a friend of direct democracy. He said direct democracy would quickly and disastrously founder on the reefs of cognitive incompetence. Of course, in reality, research, much of which by my colleagues at the University of Bern, the Political Science Unit, they have demonstrated that mostly voters, particularly if they vote on critical pocketbook, tax and spending issues, they vote prudently, they vote public-mindedly. The one big exception to the rationality and prudence of the sovereign voter here is indeed immigration and minority matters. And that leads you to only one possible conclusion: democracy is bad for immigrants. And D'Amato hints at this in his closing section of his instructive chapter, the behind closed doors approach to immigration issues, which Rosini has written so influentially about, is impossible in Switzerland. Now, one could further say that, of course, this restriction, this bent of the popular vote is not limited to the immigration function. Nationality law shows exactly the same problem. I have a good friend of mine who's an Israeli jurist, Leah Borgert, he once said, to become Swiss is as difficult as converting to Judaism, and this through the Orthodox, not the Reformist bench or branch. Now, it would be erroneous, however, to conclude that the Swiss qua Swiss are more xenophobic, more restriction-minded than other European publics. Indeed, the differentia specifica is the availability of the direct democracy instrument to give expression to popular sentiment, and we know that, with the possible exception of Canada, it is anti-immigrant and anti-minority oriented in shades of gray. That is kind of the pattern in rich society. So it's the availability to give expression to hostility towards migrants, which is the differentia specifica of Switzerland. Now, I close with a more general remark here. The Swiss apparent archaism on immigration and citizenship, it gives us an idea of how a democratic immigration and citizenship policy without all liberal decorum would look like. Contemporary liberals are so much infused by a cosmopolitan ideal that they have lost the sense of the ultimately political, the ultimately boundary-setting function of membership policy that can never be completely caged by liberal law principles. My previous colleague Stefano Bartolini recently published a remarkable book on the political, and he spends much energy on distinguishing what the political as a category is as distinct from law. And with respect to the political, he writes, the integrity of the territorial group, the physical security of its members are constantly at stake. The field of constitutive predicaments of community life is the one area in which politics is most clearly foreign and irreducible to law. Henry Sidgwick, a prominent 19th century liberal, had still a keen sense for this. And a very interesting piece called The Elements of the Political, he distinguishes between a cosmopolitan ideal to order political life, perhaps the ideal of the future, as he writes, and he contrasts it with the national ideal of political organization. Only on the basis of the national ideal, Sidgwick says, is it possible to achieve, on the one side, internal cohesion, and on the other side, he writes, to raise the standard of living among the poorer classes. David Guthardt, lässt grüßen. Accordingly, the nature of immigration policy, which he interestingly discusses within a chapter that deals with the principles of international duty, the nature of immigration policy is, I quote Sidgwick, the right to admit aliens on its own terms, imposing any conditions on entrance or any tolls on transit, and subjecting them to any legal restrictions or disabilities that it may deem expedient. For Sidgwick, this follows from the international law principle of mutual non-interference, and the only restriction to that is to give foreigners due warning and due time for withdrawal. Well, the Swiss are modern-day Sidgwickians. And interestingly, it is now the cause of right-wing populists to defend the national ideal, Sidgwick's word, that for the 19th century liberal had been an undisputed ideal, or the undisputed ideal of the day. And one very last concluding word here. I myself, when I'm not here at Learn Colloquia, I'm supposed to sit at home and scribble, finish a book, which is about three-fourths done, reflecting on what populism has done or is doing on membership policy, broadly understood, that excludes immigration and citizenship policy. And there are two messages, at least, with respect to the immigration function that I want to bring across. And the first message I already mentioned when I had my first 5 minutes yesterday, namely, neoliberalism today does much of the nasty work that neo-nationalists are supposed to do. In fact, neo-nationalists today just have to talk the talk of the neoliberals and they get their point across. Earning, migrants have to earn their way into the system, they have to deserve, and all those who are costly to the thrifty collectivity of the taxpayer better get them out. So that's kind of the first message. And the second message, that is now in light of Switzerland. I think we exaggerate the impact of later day or contemporary day populism or neo-nationalism on membership policy. We always have to be aware there's a structural nationalism that is written into the nature, into the core of membership policy. Always many more have to be rejected than can ever be admitted. And in fact, empirically speaking, particularly in Europe, the big restrictions, most of the big restrictions in asylum policy, in family unification policy, have been done before contemporary populists have been on the map. Remember Charles Pasqua, zero immigration policy. When Phil had his roundabout view of Germany, there was a picture of Helmut Kohl in 1982. We must divide the number of Turks in half. They don't assimilate. That is the talk of the AfD today. And you all, you know what? Both Helmut Kohl and the AfD got it exactly right.
Okay, on that provocative note, let's give him a hand.